It's an erotic swordplay movie for blade fetishists featuring Anthony Hopkins playing, I don't know, Spanish maybe? Whatever, a whole mine blows up at the end, it's fine. It's The Mask of Zorro, and it was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Yes, it's the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with... have we been doing this long enough that I may call you Pumpkin and Honey Bunny? Pumpkin and Honey Bunny.
Everybody be fucking cool, that's a robbery.
That's Camila Adams. And Robin Hitchcock.
Hi, hello.
I find it endearing, actually. Thank you. I appreciate that. You could, that can carry over.
I think this makes me, I don't know, the waitress? It's the...
Your garçon.
Garçon?
That means boy.
But it's... It means boy. It's not, anyway. It's not just us. Robin, tell the folks at home what's going on this week.
So this week, we are so happy to be joined by... our recent trivia champion, Bill Fisher, who is also, in addition to being a fan of the show, he is a friend of mine from Arcade Comedy Theater, and I believe also a blade fetishist, if I'm remembering your personal history correctly, by which I mean to say you're a fencer.
Ooh.
That is correct. I do fence.
Nice.
Which is part of the reason I chose this movie, which we can go into later.
And he dominated our, well, actually, who was he really neck and neck with until the final where Bill just like destroyed?
I don't even recall.
Was it Mark? Whoever
I think
it was
Mark, our frequent Twitter interactor and another longtime fan of the show. Mark was right up there.
But we're really happy to have Bill here, and he selected this movie for us.
And it's also funny because Bill, you usually like you've done I think all of the trivias that we've had. It's only been a few, but you always roll in there like, eh, I don't know, I'm not so good, you know, I'm just kind of guessing. And then this one, you're just like, bitches.
The prize but nicer. Sitting on the show, that's something I've always wanted to do. So I was like, I'm studying for this thing. I'm take notes. I will listen to the episodes again. I will look up the movies.
I love it.
I got lucky on some of them, a lot of them, too. So.
Yeah, some of those questions were just mean.
Yeah. But those ones, I was like, Q. I don't know. That was the right answer.
The important thing is Bill is here. And Bill, as you teased it, but let's go a little bit farther. Why The Mask of Zorro, specifically?
So I have a list of like four or five movies that are on my, the top, my favorite movies. 2001 A Space Odyssey, not on your list. Also really slow and occasionally hard to follow. Blade Runner, Robin doesn't like it. Also
Thank
not
you.
On your list.
Oh, good.
The 2049 is on the list, but I didn't like that one nearly as much. The Matrix, I didn't want to interfere with the Keanu review, Robin. So
thank you. Right.
Airplane, not on the list. Princess Bride might be on the list, but I feel that one's been over. You know, it's like, we'll just spend the whole time quoting the movie.
Right.
Right.
So then I just went, let's look at the list and find something cheesy and fun, and we'll go with it. And that's what we got, Mask of Zorro. And also the fencing thing, since I... fence, and it had swordplay.
How long have you been a fencer?
So I did it in college for 3-4 years, and then I took about 25-30 years off, and independently of knowing that I did it, my kids, my son started fencing in his junior year of high school, and I went, well, I should do it too. And so it's been about 2 years that I've been doing it now that I'm old and fat and out of shape.
That's something that I've always kind of wanted to get involved with. And now, I mean, this, it loans itself well to this COVID pandemic world. I mean, you're already wearing a mask and you're fully covered.
Yeah, the mask is not, it's permeable.
Well, yeah, but you know, you can put your other mask underneath it and then there, you know, you've got.
There's a joke t-shirt or a saying thing that fencing is the perfect COVID sport because anytime anybody gets too close, you just stab them.
Oh, that's just me at the grocery store.
Right. Bill, what's your preferred weapon?
The saber.
Okay, cool.
So there's three weapons, foil, épée, and saber. The saber is comparable to what you'll see in this movie. So there you go. The other two are pointy, stabby weapons. The saber is slashy, slashy. So it's more dynamic and swashbucklery and fun. So
yes.
But dovetailing with one of Antonio Banderas' good lines. Yeah, I know how to use it. The pointy end goes in the other man.
Yes.
Like, yes, correct.
You are right.
One of the lessons, I'm also the coach for the high school team, and I always say pointy bit, shiny bit, because it's okay. You wear a shiny vest that's conductive and electricity and so forth, and you don't need to know the details, but that's the summation of Antonio's line there is exactly right.
Interesting, The Princess Bride is also on your list, because at one point I thought, are the Dread Pirate Roberts and Inigo Montoya just a deconstructed Zorro?
That's funny, because I kind of had the same thought. I was thinking, oh, so just to explain it to myself, Zorro is basically like the Dread Pirate Roberts in the fact that it's just a name and it just, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a role.
Before we get into the deep history of Zorro, first we have to tell you what happens in this movie, 1998's Mask of Zorro. And to do that in 60 seconds, by the way, I don't think we're ever allowed to fail again when Camila did Pulp Fiction in about 45 seconds.
I know.
Wow.
And this is another one I didn't get a chance to practice. I am coming in hot. I finished the movie 20 minutes ago.
Oh, man.
So it's fresh.
That shit is fresh.
All right.
And go.
During the Mexican War for Independence, Anthony Hopkins swashbuckles as Zorro until he's thwarted by the evil Don Rafael, who kills his wife, steals his daughter, and throws Tony in jail. 20 years later, Antonio Banderas' brother gets killed by Captain Love. Old Zorro breaks out of prison, recruits Antonio to be young Zorro. Old Zorro's daughter has grown up to be Catherine Zeta-Jones. Don Rafael has an evil scheme to buy California from Mexico with gold mined by enslaved Mexicans. Young Zorro has a misbehaving horse and flirts with Catherine Zeta-Jones by sword fighting her clothes off. Don Rafael is going to blow up the gold mine and kill all the workers, but the Zorros get their revenge on their family and free the workers before they are exploded. Catherine Zeta-Jones realizes she's Old Zorro's daughter because she knows the smell of Californian flowers. Old Zorro dies, says, you two should get married. They do, and have a baby.
42 seconds.
Yes!
Well done. It's impressive for me because there's an entire movie in the first 12 minutes of this movie,
right,
which I loved. I loved the James Bond but swords opening, which, just in case you didn't get the we're having fun here, when it finally cuts, there's a incongruous cat snarl noise just to be like, it's Goofy, we're having a good time.
Yeah.
And then that opening sequence is a full movie with a beginning, middle, and end. If you're going to do that, you better be really confident in the next 2 hours, because you just gave us a whole story with all of the swashbuckling.
Right.
And you're like, now settle in. You're like, I don't know. I kind of got all the, he chopped people and he swung and I can go, I think.
But then they introduce the hot people.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, wait, this is what'll keep you here sitting in the seats.
Have we talked on the show about Richard Roper? That's his name, right? The guy who took over for Gene Siskel when Gene Siskel died on Ebert and became Ebert and Roper.
Oh,
yeah.
He's a bad film critic. And when he took over, I was so disappointed. You know, I loved that show, watched it my entire life. And one of the things that I disliked about him at the time was that he always commented on the attractiveness of the participants in movies. And listening to my own podcast, I have grown up to be that person. And so I have this weird apology due to Roper. But like, seriously, watching this movie, it's so much more fun to watch because Antonio Banderas and Catherine Zeta-Jones are two of the most beautiful people who have ever lived.
Exactly. It's like, listen, that really does. I mean, it may be shallow, it may be trite, but it absolutely will. It weighs in heavily on my willingness to sit there for 2 hours and watch something.
2 hours and 17 minutes.
Right.
That's like my big knock against this movie. I really like it, but come on.
Yeah.
it's adulthood is what it is, because you're a teenager and without admitting it, you go to movies to stare at hot people.
Right.
And then you're in your 20s and you're like, this isn't right. We should, their value as a performer is not related to how much I want to fuck them. And then like you hit 30 and up and you're like, listen, I still just want to look at hot people. Like, I hope they're good too, but
right.
If I'm going to look at something for 2 hours, it better be good. It better be good to look at, which I'm sure is why this is Bill's favorite movie. No, Bill, tell us, aside from, you told us why you chose it, but why do you consider this in that upper echelon of your favorites?
I wouldn't say it's in the upper echelon of my favorites, but it's a fun movie that, you know, it doesn't have a lot of, like, another option was District 9, which is really politically commentary heavy. I didn't want to go with that. I thought something fun. It's
appreciated
December in 2020 when all this crap's going down. Let's have something fun,
yeah,
and light. And so, you know, that's at least 75% of why I picked this one, as opposed to, you know, something like District 9 or something more dense and meaningful and laden with subtext and stuff.
Yeah, when you mentioned District 9, I like my heart sank because when I saw that movie in the theater, I almost had to leave. And I've almost never left a movie. The only time I ever did it was because there was a live cricket in the theater when I saw Drive, which is a very slow, quiet movie, and it was too distracting. But yeah, the body horror stuff in that really messed with me. And then I also, the political subtext stuff, like, I'll go on a tear about it. And this is much more fun to talk about. So thank you.
I was so glad this was fun. I was worried that it was going to be like a slightly later breed of big budget action. Like, I'm thinking of that Jake Gyllenhaal Prince of Persia or the Assassin's Creed movie, where it's like, oh yeah, you forgot to make this fun at all. And like the fact that this was kind of silly and kind of adventure, you know, there's a big chunk of Indiana Jones DNA in this Mask of Zorro. And that's such a relief.
And that's because there's a big chunk of Zorro in Indiana Jones.
Right. The source material, if you watch the 1950s TV show, which I have done some of, I haven't watched all 75 episodes or however many there are, but it's very much of this sort of goofy, swashbucklery, you know, just 50s comedy action thing. This is just a continuation of that.
Well, to get into that a little bit, and only a little bit, because you can't possibly summarize Zorro in the following 5 minutes, but here are some facts. The Mask of Zorro was released July 17th, 1998, the 13th number one movie of that year, winning its opening weekend with $22.5 million. It was close. The second weekend of Lethal Weapon 4 was the runner-up with 21.7, so it only won by a bit. One other new release that weekend, it was There's Something About Mary, which I was somewhat surprised debuted in fourth with $13.7 million. I guess that was a slow burn sleeper hit kind of a deal.
I think that has some kind of record that maybe was, I might be thinking about My Big Fat Greek Wedding, but didn't that movie take longer than any other movie to eventually get to number one?
I think you're thinking of My Big Fat Greek Wedding. But
there's
similar stories, I think, that where they hung around and people saw them, but they were never.
Or I thought maybe Big Fat Greek Wedding was the highest grossing movie that never went to number one or something like that. Anyway.
It was easy when all of this information was readily available on Box Office Mojo, but now it's behind that damn paywall. Mask of Zorro was only a one weekend winner, fell to second the following weekend, $13.4 million, dethroned by the debuting Saving Private Ryan, which would go on to be the number one film of that year. There were a ton of new releases that summer. It was very busy, so this film was only in the top 10 for 4 weeks, went on to earn $94 million domestically, 19th overall for the year, which fell just behind Best Picture winner Shakespeare in Love, which was in 18th. I did not know Shakespeare in Love was a $100 million movie.
Wow.
You know, people liked that movie a lot.
Apparently.
Gwyneth Paltrow's boobs, I don't know.
Yeah.
That is responsible for a good 12 to 15 million of those dollars. Mask of Zorro was, however, a big international hit, which is largely why it still got a sequel, even though it was not exactly a sensation. The Legend of Zorro was released October 28th, 2005. Not a number one movie in America. Earned $16.3 million its opening weekend. Opened in second behind the debuting Saw 2. So thank Camila for that one. Its total was just $46.4 million domestically, enough to end the series, but it was still profitable because it made more than double that outside of North America. Zorro, this guy, he was created in 1919 by a writer named Johnston McCulley, who mainly did works of Pulp Fiction. The first Zorro novel, The Curse of Capistrano, has sold more than 50 million copies. There are a ton of books. There are a ton of short stories. There are more than 40 movies from all around the world. I mean, if you look at the Wikipedia page that lists these, there's between 8 and 12 American movies, and then there's like, here's the 7 Mexican Zorro movies, here's the 8 Italian Zorro movies, here's the 5 French Zorro movies. It's just that kind of character, which is in the public domain now, which helps as well. The first of those was just a year after the book, The Mark of Zorro, from 1920, starring Douglas Fairbanks. The most famous is the one that Bill mentioned, the Disney television series, which ran from 1957 to 1959. Who knows why? Not on Disney Plus. I was like, oh, can I? No, you can't. But a movie called The Sign of Zorro is on Disney Plus, which is just 8 different episodes of the show kind of edited together into a feature movie.
Which is just Zorro catching up on paperwork. The sign of Zorro.
Zorro invents the auto pen. I remember watching that show. It would be like early in the morning on the Disney Channel when I was a little kid. And I remember watching it, but I don't really remember what it was like.
Right.
Bill,
what was it like this movie? Really, just a little, they were more serious. I mean, this movie takes it far less seriously than the TV show did, just because of the time period, right? I mean, the 90s, which much more cynical than the 50s, so.
I mean, I gotta say, this is the frothiest movie I've ever seen that features somebody being presented with their dead brother's head in a jar.
Right?
Fair point.
I would watch the 1974 television remake of the 1920 film with Frank Langella as Zorro. That would work. If you're eager for more Zorro content, NBC is working on a broadcast series about a character named Z, a female descendant of the original Zorro fighting to protect the defenseless. So look for that.
Cool.
Why not?
And okay, girl Zorro.
Yeah, and if you're, you know,
Zora,
not interested in that, just watch Batman, because Batman was inspired by Zorro. So.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to translate to that to the Faxi segment, because I know it's a much bigger topic. But yes, in the intro to the This Is What Zorro Is Wikipedia page, it's like, also, this is pretty much Batman, down to like the butler that Anthony Hopkins poses as briefly is also the inspiration for Alfred and a lot of the iconography. Zorro is proto Batman.
Also, weren't Thomas and Martha Wayne seeing a Zorro movie
before they were murdered?
Interesting.
It's funny. Just by that association, if you look carefully in the background of The Mask and Zorro, Martha Wayne gets murdered, because it just happens in every other movie you ever see. When they got murdered in Joker, it was like, can we go one movie? Batman's not even in this one.
I mean, yeah, he is.
Yeah, he is. That's
baby Batman.
Which is dumb.
It's so dumb, but that's another podcast, another day.
We'll land on it eventually. Fate demands that we eventually land on Joker. 2 fun facts before we go. Antonio Banderas was trained by sword trainer Bob Anderson, who said, this guy is my best student since Errol Flynn.
Well.
He also was the guy who trained Errol Flynn to be Robin Hood.
Wow. And so he only had the 2 students.
And the director, because I'm sure we won't get back to him, it's not exactly an auteur film, but the director is Martin Campbell. We talked about him already because he also directed GoldenEye. In fact, they asked him to come back and do Tomorrow Never Dies, and he said, no, I am going to go do Mask of Zorro instead. He is still around. He is kind of half in director jail because of the Green Lantern.
Ooh. Yeah, he should be in director jail, or at least a director home arrest.
Right.
Yeah.
Director Halfway House.
He's done some smaller things, but no one has trusted him with a lot of money since then. So, those being the facts, before we move on, I'm sorry, what nationality is Anthony Hopkins supposed to be here?
Senor Hopkins is no Espanol.
He didn't even try. I
mean, no, he didn't try.
She tried a Spanish accent. I don't think it was that good, but...
I mean, because Catherine Zeta-Jones is like, she's like Ariana Grande, where she's like, please assume that I'm Latina.
Right.
She's Welsh.
Okay.
I think that Anthony Hopkins, you know, I don't think he is trying to be Mexican. I think he is a colonizer who adopted a folkiro status in Mexico.
That's basic. That's where I was going. I was like, you know what? Yeah. I'll accept that. Even though the movie's not really telling me that, I will go ahead and accept that.
Right.
Bill, is this Zorro lore? Is it that the old Zorro is Spanish from Spain and the young one is Mexican? Is that what we're to believe here?
I think in this movie, that's sort of what you're... I mean, the original book, they're both Spanish. I mean, there's no both. Diego de la Vega, who's Anthony Hopkins, is a Spanish-born citizen, and he moves to California and is a don. He's a landowner. And then moves back to Spain for a while, and then comes back, pretends to be a fop, completely worthless in a fight as his non-Zorro persona to confuse people so that they don't think he is Zorro, and then obviously he is.
Like Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, exactly.
Does Bruce Wayne pretend to... I don't think he dumbs it down enough. You know,
it depends on which portrayal of Bruce Wayne you're talking about, but my favorite Bruce Waynes are the ones who act like total jerks. Like, Michael Keaton is the best Batman and the worst Bruce Wayne.
Gotcha.
I was surprised that this PG-13 clearly, like, bring the whole family summer blockbuster is just horny. Like, yeah, when they dance, they're just straight up dance fucking. But yes. when he's like shirtlessly doing push-ups over lit candles and there's a whip nearby,
tell me more.
And also, him sword fighting her clothes off.
Right?
Is just great movie making.
Exactly.
That is why they invented the movies.
Right. Like the first, like, slit of her slip, and then it like just shows just a little bit of thigh, but her boots is what really got me. It's like, oh, his boots are badass. And yes, the sword fighting choreography in this is amazing. Like, I love everything about it. And that
Bill,
scene.
Is it good?
From I know from someone who actually does it.
So let's separate. There's a skill of stage fencing and a skill of actual fencing. This is very clearly stage fencing. They are attacking each other's weapons, not each other.
Right.
From that regard, it's really good. It's very good stage fencing. I mean, the guy taught him when he knows what the hell he's doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, Antonio and Captain Love, the actor's name, I don't know. They do a great job of doing stage fencing very well, but none of those cuts would actually land on their opponent, so it's not real fencing.
That makes sense.
Yeah, who the hell was that guy? Who played Guy Whiteman in this film?
He is so white!
Guy
he really found was. The whitest actor on Earth to try to make Anthony Hopkins more plausibly Mexican, maybe.
Right.
His first name is Matt Letcher.
I was like, is that Owen Wilson?
Identity. He's just a guy. Sorry to reduce, you know, a successful Hollywood career to he's just a guy, but he's just a guy.
It's just some dude. But yeah, so the dance scene, the dance sequence. This.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if this happens in a lot of Antonio Banderas movies. I haven't done the math, but watching that man dance is enough to for the price of admission for anything. Like, there's just. And he's not even like on a list of mine or anything like that. It's just like, I just appreciate Antonio and his dance abilities. And it was just very well placed to put this in the film. And applause.
Agreed.
He was definitely staring at her tits a lot though.
Well, wouldn't you?
Did I not mention that part of this picking was looking at Catherine Zeta-Jones?
My wife
watched it for looking at Antonio Banderas. So right. It's perfectly even. You know, if you like guys.
Everybody's happy.
Right?
Yeah.
It's interesting because, yeah, this is a horny and violent movie. Angrily spitting and then shooting yourself in the chest out of spite is a fun mood.
Fucking loved it, though.
Like, yeah.
It's perfect. I'm going to... Rebelness, or this is going to make me so proud, or whatever. He's like, ha ha. No, it's not.
Not today. I'm sorry. I got to give the casting director props because that guy looks like he could be Antonio Banderas' less attractive brother.
Right.
And then the woman who is playing Catherine Zeta-Jones' mom also looks like she could be Catherine Zeta-Jones' mom.
Right.
For all of the violence and the kink, which I didn't even mention my favorite one, which is I love horse gags. Horse humor is always great.
Yes.
And after the cutting her clothes off scene, they have this little exchange where she's like, he was very vigorous. Vigorous, vigorous. And then in the background, a horse goes, and it's like, yes, correct. But for all of that, we used to talk more than we have recently about the MPAA and how, you know, weird things get weird ratings. This isn't an R-rated movie. They packed it full of sex and violence. And I'm like, nope, this is still a 10 years old and up family entertainment.
I saw the warning was drug usage. For the rating right beforehand, it's, I think drug usage was one of the reasons for the rating.
What?
And I was trying to figure out what drug are we talking about.
Was there tobacco?
I mean, that's all I could see. Like, they were smoking something at some point, like, you know, when in the whips, Anthony Hopkins, and he's standing there basically just fucking posing with a whip, waiting for Antonio to come back in the cave, and he's smoking and whipping and smoking, and I'm like, I feel really conflicted right now. I don't know what I'm feeling about Sir Hopkins.
Passing moments of being attracted to Anthony Hopkins are inevitable and hard to deal with.
Because it's like anything I've ever seen him in, it's very cut and dry. It's like either, oh my God, I am terrified of this man, or, oh, he's grandpa. Hey, Pappy, how you doing? Never have I felt this before.
May I recommend The Lion in Winter, which is a movie from the late 60s. And you can see young Anthony Hopkins in all of his sexy glory.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's also just a great movie.
I want to be critical because I do think it's very fun. I enjoyed a lot of it. I mean, the reason it doesn't rise higher, one, as Robin said, it's too damn long. Like, there's a lot of that party scene that did not need to be there. It's also, for better and for worse, very traditional storytelling. Mm-hmm. Better in that it works, it's very easy to get hooked on, but it's like, you're sad because we killed your wife and you're trying to rescue your daughter and symbolically pass your daughter on to a younger version of yourself. A lot of that is like, yeah, okay. It works because that's how you hook audiences, but it's a little eye-rolly, I thought.
Yeah.
I thought it could be edited a lot tighter, too. There were several scenes where I'm like, why did we need to watch Captain Love walking from this place to this place for no purpose whatsoever?
Right.
Yeah, I feel like they almost intentionally made it long to give it, like, an epic feel. That's my best guess, because I completely agree with what you just said, Bill, where there are obvious parts where it's like, tighten this up. Yeah. We do not care so much about the Dons.
Right. And I think you're right about that, wanting to give it an epic feel. That's probably the feeling of like, well, we're doing a story about Zorro, so it's got to be epic. We got to make it, we got to punch it up. It's got to be big, because like a Zorro is Zorro.
I also think that this movie, like, this doesn't really reduce my score, but it's just an interesting thing. It has this very old-fashioned feel to it, in that, like, all the sets are very obviously sets. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they look like cheap, but then they destroy them, and in destroy, like, so many things blow up in this movie. And every time things blow up or get torn apart by rampaging horses, etc., I'm like, wow, that probably cost a lot of money. So it's simultaneously cheap and expensive looking.
Right.
I understand that you used a lot of dynamite there, Butch, but like, it's rocks. You're blowing up rocks. It's not an oil tanker. That explosion carries on for a good 60 seconds.
I had to show every single camera angle they took of that explosion. Mm. So.
I think it's because there was already explosives in there, because that's how they were digging the mine deeper. Does not deserve this much consideration. But that is why I thought that was such a big explosion.
Yeah. I mean, I have some criticism. I mean, it's not very friendly to the female gender in general as a movie, to say the least. I think it's, you know, like, it fails the Bechdel test. That's the obvious one. But also,
I disagree. She has that conversation with the woman.
Oh, that's right.
In
about
the market.
Mom.
But they were talking about
her mom.
Mother.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Her mom.
But wait, did that woman in the market have a name?
No.
Yeah, because that was, it was, she was referred to because she was the nanny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does the nanny
okay.
have a name? So, I always forget
the
named character.
Name,
but yeah, no, Bill's obviously correct. This is, women are sidelined and are prizes for men.
Right. And then just the whole, you know, they're there to be seen and not heard. And like, you know, was it this movie? I may have been confusing it with something else, but did Catherine Zeta have some stuff to say about the war that was happening? And they all were like, ha ha ha, women have such a weird understanding of...
when they're like dismissing her for having a correct opinion about
right.
it. Does Zorro have politics, or is he just like a rob the rich kind of guy? Like,
no,
he's
very much free the oppressed. He's not a rob the rich guy. He doesn't care about money so much as rescuing the oppressed and underrepresented.
But like, does he wanted a free Mexico, but then does he want a free California?
I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't either. And I don't think it matters. I'm just curious.
No. The plot points about how Catherine Zeta-Jones, Elena, identified that Anthony Hopkins was her dad. That was like, you were a baby.
Right.
How do you remember the flowers and
exactly.
the song?
Exactly. And
also, it's not like you, I know that it was a different time, but I'm pretty sure you could take a flower on a wagon from California elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the whole thing. It was like, no, this flower only grows in California or wherever.
And, does it?
Right. And she had to have been like, she was definitely under a year old when right. she was taken. So I don't buy it. The whole, you know, this flower, that scent is familiar. Oh, your voice. It sounds, it's so soothing. I can blah, 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 blah.
Which brings up my larger point, which is that there are a lot of very convenient plot points that instead of making sense are just like, well, we need this to happen, so here's mm-hmm. what happens.
Right.
Like, how did Antonio become so good at bullshitting in the party scene when they didn't show a training montage like they did the sword fight? I mean
we're led to assume that he also had some good, I mean that training montage, not as you know, upbeat and interesting and entertaining as, you know, them just over some old scrolls and, you know, telling him what kind of political jokes to make.
I did want to say, so on my old podcast, Theronathon, about Charlize Theron, we asked if every movie that we watched, could this be improved by a prison riot? And now on the Keanu review, we ask, could this movie be improved by a training montage? And The Mask of Zorro has both.
Good point.
Why?
So growing up, my dad, I believe the movie that inspired this comment the first time was Face Off.
Yeah.
He said every movie could be improved by a prison riot.
I'm Castor Troy.
So that is where the first one came from. And then we, you know, we wanted to switch it up, and then we also were having like liberal guilt about trivializing imprisonment, and so we switched to training montage.
Interesting.
Training montages are great. Unless you don't know if you've crossed the montage threshold until you cross it. Like,
right.
I think it's Clerks 2. Clerks 2 has like three montages. And by the time you get to the third one, you're like, wait a minute, why the fuck did Clerks 2 need even one montage, let alone all of these? Oh, it's perfect. I mean, I will leave it to Robin as the montage expert. This was an A+ training montage.
I enjoyed it very much. The only thing I wish that we got a little, going back to the horse content. I wish we got more about that horse getting its act together.
If you showed me a short film once a day of somebody trying to jump on a horse and missing, I would laugh every day for the rest of my life.
And also the way that he's like, I will give you the honor of being my horse.
Right.
The
horse is like, I see you. It's like, all right.
Because he's a horse.
I got something for you. And then just the whole fact of him trying to like jump off of the roof onto like trying to call him over, and the horse is like, nay. And then he gets
my favorite part of the movie.
Well, let's rate it and see where we land on The Mask of Zorro, our first bit of Zorro content. And hey, we'll count it as our first bit of Batman content. I will go to 71, a hearty 71 for The Mask of Zorro. To Robin.
I have 72. I do want to correct you, though. The Lego movie has Batman.
Hell yeah.
The Lego movie was our first Batman content.
Faxy out.
Mm-hmm. Camila?
70. I didn't, like, it was fun and it was enjoyable, but I don't see myself, like, purposefully returning to it anytime soon.
Is this our most agreed upon
probably
score? Like, we are,
like,
There is no way that the three of us have been within 2 points of one another.
No.
I mean, I'll look. I mean, there's one episode that's just you and I, Robin, and we were Jagged Edge. We felt exactly the same way about. But the three of us, no way. But,
and Bill, what's your score?
Here to inflate that is Bill.
No, I'm not going to inflate it. Actually, I put it at a, I'll owe you 168.
Oh, wow.
Oh. This is fascinating. I feel like all of our guests so far have been, with the exception of Addie, have been like, here's this movie I want you to watch. I'm not going to give it a great score.
I mean, for its time, it was good. But I think, you know, watching it now, it has a lot of things that I don't necessarily think are great filmmaking. So,
right. Yeah. Like, this is not a movie that I'd be like, you know what you need to watch.
Right.
Right.
But no. Also, you know, if somebody said, I want to watch Mask of Zorro tonight, like literally tonight, I'd be like, okay.
It is fun and good and is missing the secret sauce that makes a classic.
Yeah.
You're like, play this on cable forever. It's not quite that, but it's fun. It's fun. And it's a 70.25, which is a good score. That's up there.
So because we have Christmas movies and Camila's selection coming up, and because we have new calendar year vetoes coming our way, we are going to take a break on our bingo card, although Camila has already created the squares, and they are, as always, delightful. So we're not checking off new bingo squares until the new year.
I will miss the bingo card, and I am looking forward to this one, because Camila has added the Robin Crush Square, the Sean Crush Square, and the Camila Crush Square, and that's on the honor system. Some of these we know, but you have to speak, excuse me, there's someone I haven't told you about.
Well,
I
wanted to ask, what's the threshold there? Like, because like Antonio Banderas, like you said, he's not on any list of yours.
Right. I would not have counted Antonio on that. If we were doing the score, I wouldn't have counted that. I just think it's fun. I thought it would be funny because one, it's like, it's a higher likely that we're going to hit Camila's crush before we hit something where Sean's. I think so.
Okay.
Depends on a lot.
Because I've always been a little boy crazy, so it's.
if you tracked my Google searches while I'm watching movies, you might feel differently. If there's often a short threshold to, and who is this on the screen?
But also for me, so I am a straight woman, but I like looking at beautiful women in movies. Like, does that count?
I mean, would you fuck them? Basically, let's throw it like that.
Okay.
Would you have straight up sex with them?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. I wouldn't, and I thank Camila for putting it in such stark terms. I would have probably delicately. Would you, if you met at a bar, say, wonder if
they would be so kind as to want to snuggle with you under some?
Yes, exactly.
Under a thousand.
You mind if I just cut your clothes off?
Would you say could nice you boots?
Push ups over some candles, please. Then two, you can't handle the truth. I mean, I've watched so many movies in the last week, and I could rant about all of them. I don't know. Should we talk about Happiest Season? That's what everybody's talking about.
I have not watched that.
I also watched a million D movies this week because it was Thanksgiving and because I had my Stars trial. By the way, I extended it. Like, I paid for Stars. They got me. They hooked me. Largely because they added this movie this morning. Mask of Zorro, that is. Camila and Bill, did you see Happiest Season?
I did not.
I have not.
Okay.
It's probably going to be a hot second before I do. I mean,
that is fine.
we won't go forever. I like it. I think that I don't watch a lot of Christmas movies, particularly the Christmas movies. This is kind of like smartly emulating. So
like Hallmark.
Because so the fact that it's Kristen Stewart, who I've grown to love, and Mackenzie Davis and Mary Steenburgen and Aubrey Plaza, it's this great cast top to bottom. I found it very pleasant to watch them. I found it in that funny, relatable genre we talk about a lot, because I'm relating to Kristen Stewart's horrible situation. I'm also relating to Mackenzie Davis's like family situation being really tough to navigate, and the sister character being left at, like, it's a very relatable movie. I understand that it has a happy ending because it's a Christmas movie, and that's a rule.
Does it have a happy ending?
That's the thing. As time goes on, more and more people are bringing up the, and I mean, and spoilers, I guess, like, come on. What do you think is going to happen? People are bringing up that, like, no, this is a bad relationship and the better ending would be for them to break up. And it's like, yeah, but that doesn't happen in a Christmas movie. Still, I think both points of view are valid. I just like the movie. It's just nice with nice people.
I have very mixed feelings about it. I agree the cast is great. I enjoyed the Pittsburgh location. And Kristen Stewart's really, really good in it. I think we've talked before about how I like watching her have fun. I feel like this might be the first time I've seen her play a serious role and seem totally comfortable doing it. It's weird that she has a serious role in this lighthearted Christmas rom-com. But,
right.
You know, she has, like, serious emotional turmoil going on. And, like, I think they did an excellent job justifying why Mackenzie Davis's character is closeted, but she's just kind of a bad person. Like, I don't think she is a bad person because she is closeted. As a straight person, that's not my business. And I think that the movie handles it well, explaining that's not as easy for everyone as it is for some people. And I was also relieved. As an orphan, Kristen Stewart's character is an orphan. I was very concerned that the thing was going to be like, you never had to come out to your parents because they're dead. And I was going to be like, movie off. But they didn't do that. She was like, yeah, when I came out to my parents, they were like, great, we love you. And then Dan Levy's character is like, well, when I came out to my parents, I didn't talk to my dad for 13 years. So I thought that was well done. But like when Aubrey Plaza tells the story of what happened to her and Mackenzie Davis in high school, I'm just like, oh, get out. Like, when people show you who they are, believe them. Like, run. Just walk home from Grove City, Kristen Stewart. Get out of there. Spend $1,000 on the Uber. Right? That was funny. That shot made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, that was good. Where would you have to be for a $1,000 Uber to Pittsburgh? Like, Toronto?
Grove City, apparently.
Yeah. I guess I bought that the environment in that household was so toxic for Mackenzie Davis growing up that she did not grow the ability to act differently until right now as we're watching the movie, which is why I find it relatable. Yeah, it probably would have been a better ending if Kristen Stewart had said, I respect your journey. I'm not going to be a part of it. Peace out.
Right.
But it's a movie worth watching, I guess we say. Yes. Robin's thinking.
Yes. It's funny.
Yeah.
I think if you think that you're interested in it, watch it. And if you're kind of like what I'm getting from Camila, like maybe someday, no rush.
Right.
Yeah, that seems about right. And I'm going to lightning round a few things. Because the drive-ins are getting a little thin on the ground, I watched the 2000 How the Grinch Stole Christmas, which I had never seen, which somehow was the number one movie of that year. That was the top grossing film of the year 2000, so I was very curious.
Is that the Jim Carrey one?
It is not as bad as people say. It's like, it is a mess. It is a big swing that whiffed, but like, it's so weird that you're just like, huh, the whole time. And Jim Carrey's good. Sure, why the hell not?
I've never made it through that movie.
Well, that's peak fair. Jim Carrey too, right?
It is.
Wait, what?
It's peak Jim Carrey. It's when Jim Carrey was big. You know?
The Jim Carreyest.
I just remember when that movie came out, he did a lot of press and talked about how the contact lenses he had to wear, like he described it as torture. I always think about that whenever I see even like a photograph of that movie. I'm like, poor Jim Carrey's eyeballs.
That's fair. That's fair. Also, lightning round, Super Intelligence with Melissa McCarthy on HBO Max. It is getting dragged, and I am pissed. Not because it's great. It's okay. Mm-hmm. But it is so much better than the other movies she's done that her husband directed. This is the fourth one of her movies that her husband directed after Tammy, The Boss, and Life of the Party. Tammy and The Boss are meh at best. Life of the Party is terrible. This is fine. This is fine and funny sometimes, and it's a good streaming movie. And briefly, because it deserves no more of my time, Hillbilly Elegy.
You watched two Ron Howard movies this week.
Two Ron and How the Grinch Stole Christmas was definitely the better Ron Howard movie.
Yikes.
It is. I am not kidding. How the Grinch Stole Christmas is better than Hillbilly Elegy. I'm not even getting into, speaking of toxic families, I'm not even getting into the like deeply problematic like social moment around this movie. I'm getting into, it's a whole movie where he's like, my family, we had problems, but they taught me how to live. It's like, no, they nearly killed you. You should have cut them out and never spoken to a single one of them again. This is a horror movie. You're probably a monster for not knowing that your family is monsters. It's just nothing but generational torment masquerading as down-home folksy charm. Don't watch that movie. Doesn't seem like I'm going to have to stress that point. No one is.
Was that going to be a real movie? Which is my problematic way of asking, was it just going to premiere on Netflix or was that going to get a real theatrical release in a non-COVID
I'm pretty sure that was a Netflix.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that was that and Mank, which I will watch as soon as we're done here, were there like pre-planned two big Oscar contenders for 2020.
So I thought Mank, they were going to do like a real theatrical release like they did for Irishman and Roma.
I mean, technically they did. It's in theaters right now, kind of.
Okay.
So was Hillbilly Elegy. In fact, no one noticed because we're not going to movie theaters, but every vaguely prominent Netflix movie, like Trial of the Chicago 7 was in theaters for 2 weeks before it was on streaming. Hillbilly Elegy was. The Prom is in theaters right now. Like, it's just no one's going and barely any of them are open. So we're not noticing. But yeah.
Right.
I'll talk about The Prom next week because I think it's still embargoed. But, you know, it's... Anyway, that's a lot
I'm
of me.
Bleep that.
Let's go to Robin, who also watched a lot of movies.
I was going to say, just talk about Happiest Season, but we have a little bit of time. So because I had my Stars trial, I was like, well, I'm going to watch, because I've got my quest to watch all the Oscar-nominated performances. So I'm going to watch every one that I can find in their list. So I watched The Verdict. That's pretty good. I watched Into the Wild, which is terrible. I watched Changeling, which was surprisingly watchable. I won't say that it's good. I watched American Gangster, which is one of those movies that's frustratingly near great and comes out just okay. The one that I watched that I'm the most like, watch this if you haven't seen it, is Awakenings from 1990 with Robin Williams and Robert De Niro. It's based on a true story of people who had spent decades in a apparent catatonic state after having encephalitis, who were treated with synthetic dopamine and woke up and then it stops working.
Yeah, I remember seeing that movie and crying a lot.
I cried for like 15 minutes after it was over. Yeah. Like I was like not okay.
Yeah, that's a good one. I remember seeing that.
Is that a recommendation or should we just go with The Verdict as your endorsement?
It's the best of the movies that I watched for this week, but it's like only watch it if you're ready to cry.
Yeah.
Right.
Sometimes you need a good cleansing cry.
And then the goofy movies that I watched in my Stars trial, I watched the Jumanji sequel. It was fine. Bad Boys for Life. I fell asleep during it, but I think it was good.
Probably the number one movie of 2020.
Right. And Charlie's Angels with Kristen Stewart, which I enjoyed so much. Like, it is not good, but... I had a wonderful time watching it. So if you like stupid movies where girls fight, watch it.
And it ends with not just a training montage, but a cameo-filled training montage. They're like, okay, we got to go be better at being Charlie's Angels now. And at the last thing is they're like, hi, we met Ronda Rousey and she taught us to fight. Hi, we went over here. Oh, it's fun. It's a fun, bad movie. Camila.
I managed to watch His House on Netflix, which has been like advertised. I think they're kind of like they were pumping it up as a horror film. It is a bit of a horror film, but I think it's just it's got some horrific imagery in it. And you know, into the fact that, you know, you've got this couple, this refugee couple who I believe they're from a country in Africa, and they've moved to the UK. They've been put up into this house that, you know, the government has told them you have to live here. You'll get your stipend, your weekly stipend. You can't work, blah, 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 blah. But you have to live in this house and we'll be keeping an eye on you. And the house is like haunted-ish, but it turns out, you know, spoilers, that it's basically the couple that's haunted. And then there's like this plot twist that you understand why. I'm not going to get too deep into it, but it's like a really heart-wrenching fucking plot twist. And like, and the whole movie, like, it on the surface, on the very surface, it is a horror movie, but like if you dig deep, there's a lot of like subtext on just like how And I don't even know if the director meant it as such for, like, for me anyway, because I don't know what it's like in the UK, but that, you know, the how refugees and or minorities are treated in the US. Also, motherhood. Like, it's like there's like some deep shit about motherhood. There's also a lot of gaslighting that's happening in there. Like, the shit gets deep. And there was like at some couple points I'm crying. And like, it, oh, wow. Like, it's like it and the very end is like, it's heart wrenching. And so, like, I would highly recommend it. Like, it's an onion of a movie. Like, you could, like,
is it it's too scary for me, do you think?
How do you feel about, like, voodoo type imagery?
I mean, it's really scary
because it's like that's
maybe
about
I just
it.
Need to be in the right mood.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you're making it sound really interesting.
It's very interesting. And like the writer director, his name is Remy Weeks, and it seems like this is his first feature length film.
Huh.
And I think it's definitely worth a watch. I feel like if you're not spooked too easily by certain things, and it's just like a really good movie, and the cast is great. It's got like the lead actor Soapy, I think is his first name. I don't know how you pronounce it, but I hadn't seen him in anything else before, and I think they're mostly both of them are mostly like British actors. His filmography isn't that robust, but the woman who plays his wife, she's been in a lot of things. Like, she was in a lot of different TV series. Like, she was on Luther and just, like, a bunch of other stuff. Wunmi Masaku. The only recognizable person that I know was Matt Smith, who I guess he was one of the Doctor Who's.
Yeah.
He's in there. The movie relies heavily on the two main actors. And, like, Matt Smith only comes in a couple times. Like, he's their counselor or whatever that they have to check in with. But I would very much recommend His House on Netflix.
Bill, you get to endorse something if you've seen anything non-Zorro related in the past couple of days.
No, my wife and I have been catching up on TV shows we missed in the past. It's just started one about a chemistry teacher who started cooking meth.
Oh, yeah.
A little thing. I've heard something about that.
Yeah. So we just finished season two of Breaking Bad. And
This is your first go-around?
She was at, what's that?
This is your first go-around with Breaking Bad?
Yes, that's correct.
I'm so jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife was actually a little upset that we had to watch Zorro because she was like, I must have more Breaking Bad.
Listen, yeah, like when we started watching it, we watched it at, like, before it had already started, and it was like still in the time of we have to go rent the DVDs. And so it was a lot of that, like, oh my God, we finished one, we got to hurry up and go back and get another one.
I never totally watched that show, but so Colin loved it. And every time there was a new season, he would watch the series to date before the new season.
Oh, wow.
So like I've sort of seen it. I feel like I've seen 80% of it without ever actually trying to watch it.
I came in the middle, and it was maybe the first two seasons were on Netflix. Season four was about to begin, and Netflix was dropping season three one day before the premiere of season four. So it's like, well, sounds like I've got about 12 hours.
Strap in, folks. I think I also would like to shout out, I don't know if I talked about it last week, but maybe I didn't finish it at that point, the reunion for the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh my God.
Yes, which made me realize that, hey, I already have HBO Max, and I didn't have to do anything extra. But yeah, I mean, it was so sweet and so beautiful, and I was, like, crying within the first 3 minutes, and it's just...
Them bringing back...
Aunt Viv, the original Aunt Viv.
Yes.
Janet.
That?
Something, yeah.
Was awesome.
That's and then her telling like her real story as to what happened and what her life was at that point in time. My God,
I'm just so glad that they did that because it makes everyone who was probably involved with making that reunion special happen look bad,
right?
So like, kudos to them for kind of owning it, like, right. You know, and kudos to her for being. I mean, I guess she's had almost 30 years to process it,
right.
But like. She just really distilled what happened and how horrible it was. And dude, Will Smith, send her your residuals.
Yeah, seriously. Buddy. Right.
Right. Good start on the making good on this issue.
But, yeah, exactly. Right.
Next step is whatever she would have made for the entire rest of the run of the show. Get her that. You're Will Smith.
You're Will fucking Smith. You got it. You're good for it.
I see on Twitter you are now using HBO Max as the Friends box that it always was destined to be.
Right. Like, I've watched Fresh Prince, and then I'm like, well, now what do I do? And it's like, oh, I mean, I guess let's go ahead and start Friends again, even though I own the DVDs, but it's just like, this is a lot less work.
Yeah.
HBO Max might have the best big library I've seen. It's not as big as Netflix, but it's so much better on average. Mm-hmm. It's the only one where I would say, if you only have one streaming service, you could survive just with HBO Max and be fine pretty much forever.
Yeah. I made the mistake of watching Sesame Street first on there before I realized that you could make separate profiles. And so, like, now I got fucking Elmo's face all up in all there first and foremost. And then I had to make Kajia her own profile so I don't have that again.
But we've slowly been snaking through Friends since the beginning, since we got HBO Max. I remember mentioning it to you, and we were in the same room. That's how long we've been on
Friends. Wow.
And, you know, this is 20 years late. It's so ridiculous. It's a silly sitcom. And I am walking around being mad at Ross in my day, in my spare time. I'm like, listen, the fact that you screwed up with Emily this badly, you were better off with Emily. Part of that is because I'm completely unimpressed with Rachel, and I always have been. I'm like, whatever. You're the least interesting of the six main characters on this show. I don't know why Ross is obsessed with you. But so much better off with Emily, and for him to just screw that up time and time again, he did not deserve to be the happy ending of the entire show. And I say this as a Ross. The first couple of times, we watched a little bit of it back when it was on Netflix. Mary Beth was like, which do you think you're like? And I was like, I'm kind of a Chandler. And she's like, no, you're a Ross. And then brought this up to my family. And they were like, he thinks he's a Chandler. And my dad was like, he's a Ross.
No.
I mean, I feel like Dan really hates Ross, and I haven't had the heart to tell him. He's like, because you're kind of a Ross. He's in certain ways of, like, you know, where Ross is always correcting somebody, like their grammar and right, like that kind of stuff, or like Ross. Yeah.
So actually, no.
And just the, like, I'm mopey and I'm making it everyone's problem. That's a trait I share.
But for the most part, Dan is a Monica.
I think I am a Rachel who wants to be a Chandler.
Mm.
And I mean, every comedian wants to be a Chandler, but also have the full expression of their human emotions, which we're bad at. And I'm married to Joey, and I love him.
Cute.
I think I said Chandler because one of the first times I tried to write like a funny column and I was still in college, some angry commenter online was like, this is full of outdated Chandler Bing-esque witticism. And at the time I was like, you know what? Thank you. That was fine.
Could I be any more dated? Bill, who are you? Do you know?
I get the feeling that just about every male is Ross. You know, I, based on the always correcting people comment, I'm probably a Ross just based on that alone. But, you know, as you've pointed out, Robin, I'd love to be a Chandler.
What we all want.
Well, this has been a brief preview of our forthcoming Friends rewatch podcast. Which apparently
I'm in.
Territory. Let's draw a movie, which we already did. Robin's going to stitch all of this together. So, it's time to draw a holiday movie.
Yay!
That delayed enthusiasm should tell you all that you need to know about how much we love Christmas movies on this podcast.
It's the fact there that so many snoozers got number one. Yeah.
It's not like Halloween where it's so... That's the surprising thing. I mean, I guess not, because horror is a whole year-round genre as opposed to, you know,
right,
6 weeks out of the year that you put on a Christmas movie. But our list of Halloween-appropriate movies is, I think, at least 150 number ones.
Nice.
And Christmas is... We have, like, 10 and then another 10 that kind of count. Speaking of which, here's how that works. We're going to do two Christmas movies this year. One of them has to be a real, honest holiday film. We have our, like, holiday light category, and if we can land on that once. But
which
at
includes
least...
things like Batman Returns or last year's right. While You Were Sleeping.
Right,
where
which
it's
ended up not at, being holiday light at all.
No, that could have been in the other category, but there's quite a few that are set at Christmas and Christmassy, but not, you know, we can have no more than one of those. At least one, if not two of them, have to be real, honest to Kringle holiday things. And the first one we will be watching is number 81. That is, in fact, holiday light. It is Batman Returns.
Oh my God, Robin. You're just like on it.
I am magic. I want $1 million and a vaccine.
Yeah.
It's going to be in a different episode, so that won't make sense.
Right.
Oh, wow.
I haven't seen it in a while. I'm Same. Pumped about it. And isn't it appropriate to look at the Penguin in the waning days of the Trump presidency?
Yes. I'm loving those memes.
Yeah, Batman Returns. That'll be fun.
Cool.
So I'll only add how appropriate, and we didn't draw it up this way, it's what Bill wanted, that we go from straight from Zorro to Batman.
Amazing. I love it. It's absolutely perfect.
I am so excited.
psychic.
With the Penguin and...
It's the Bat, the Cat, Batwoman. And the Penguin.
Mm-hmm. The best... I'll go ahead before we even say it and say the best on-screen Catwoman. Mm. It's
Eartha Kitt.
Eartha Kitt.
The best, definitely the best big screen Catwoman.
Okay, we'll give you that. I will allow it.
Can't wait. So we'll get in the holiday season with that next week. And for our first of two holiday episodes, we just increased because last year when we were doing every 2 weeks, we did one. So now, hey, we're doing two of them. Merry Christmas and watch some movies. And...
So, Bill, thank you so much for joining us and picking a really enjoyable movie.
Yes,
also,
this was amazing. You did a great job adding your thoughts and your comments on the film and also just picking the film. Like, again, thank you for not picking District 9 and for going with Antonio Banderas is The Mask of Zorro.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to future episodes.
Thank you. Yay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Anyway, The Mask of Zorro was released July 17th, 1998. What was the number one song in America when a giant Z was slashed on the box office?
The Aerosmith Armageddon song?
Ooh.
Good
guess. I don't
guess.
Want to miss a thing. That's what that's called.
Man, I hate in that video where... That's not the right answer. I hate in that video. There's the scene from the movie where Liv Tyler is crying because her dad, Bruce Willis, is dying on the asteroid, mm-hmm. and they replace it with Steven Tyler because it's her actual dad. And I'm like, shut up. You're being too clever.
Yes.
No, it's not. It's not that.
Closing time?
I don't have a clue because my kid was 1 year old. So.
Right. You have the pop culture... black spot
right
that yeah, helps with right. having a baby.
Camila, do you have a guess?
Closing time?
No. Do I give the clue that'll give it away right away? I mean, I'll say famous duet and it probably won't take long from there.
Brandy so and Monica?
Correct.
Yes.
The boy is mine.
how many famous duets are there? It wasn't going to be Islands.
Was it going to be so. Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson or
Peaches and Herb?
Man, that song was rightfully everywhere. That's one, like, I don't know why the other one that jumped into my mind is Call Me Maybe. But, like, that's one of those songs that was everywhere for 4 months, and it was like, yes, correct.